Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Good evening, everyone. Aloha. And thank you for letting us come to your home this evening, again, on a Tuesday evening. And we got some really, really incredible things we're going to talk about this evening. Got a very, very special guest, an old friend of the museum, one of the original history generals, Mr. Roger Green. And I'll be bringing him on in just a few minutes. But before we do anything, I really would like to talk about someone who's very special. And we found out this week that he's being taken care of in a very special way. And we want to give all the love and sincerity, heartfelt feelings of sport karate to this gentleman. He actually is the father of American Taekwondo. He's instrumental for bringing Taekwondo to Texas in San Marcos in the early days and teaching Mr. Alan Steen, Mr. J. Pat Burleson. And I'm talking about Grandmaster Jun Rhee. This week we got word that he's being taken care of in a home now. So if you do have any type of connections to get in touch with him or get in touch with some of his students like Mr. Smith or Mr. Chung, please do so and give him the love that you have for Grandmaster Jun Rhee. I'm going to go into my program, but I just really want to share a really neat story that people realize who he is and what he's done for everybody and what he's done for me personally. I was at the Super Grands in 1994 in Hollywood, California, and running the MC with a gentleman named Scott Hogarth from California, from Canada. And the security guard asked me to, there was a little Oriental man in back trying to get in, but he didn't have a pass. And the gentleman who ran the National Black Belt League at the time, and still does, he's very strict on the security. So I went back there, and of course, it was Master Rhee. And I told the security guard, you need to let him in. He is very important. He's a special surprise. No one knew he was going to be there. So please. And the security guard would not move. He would not let Master Rhee in. And he didn't get violent, but he ended up grabbing my shoulder. And I swept the guy through the ground and grabbed Master Rhee by the arm and started running down the hallway, grabbing Master Rhee by the arm, and I was just kind of really nervous. I said, Master Rhee, I'm in so much trouble. Mr. Lydell is going to kill me, okay? And he said, in these exact words, he says, golly, don't worry. Just give me the microphone. And I said, yes, sir. So I went up to Mr. Hogarth, and I said, I need the microphone. And I gave the microphone to Master Jun Rhee, who was not supposed to be there. It was a surprise to everybody in the audience. It was a Super Grands grand finale. Hear the microphone, and Master walks up on stage, and he tells a couple jokes, and then all of a sudden, he does his 100 push-ups in 1 minute. And then he does a sidekick, perfect, with a glass of water on his head. And he looked at me, and he turned around. As he turned around, he winked, and he said, don't worry, golly. And he told another joke. That's Grandmaster Jun Rhee. And how he saved me 1 year in 1994 at the Super Grands. So I love you, Grandmaster Jun Rhee, and I wish you all the best in whatever your journey is. And anyone that loves Master Grand Jun Rhee, please contact and send him your love, flowers, cards, a message, anything. God bless you guys. Well, I've got a great, great guest tonight. And before I bring him on, I want you to know that the heart of this program is a Who's Who in the Martial Arts book that we've worked on I've been involved with that for a few years, but it was created by Jan Wollendorf and Dale Brooks and in the early 80s, and now taken over by the amazing Hansi Jesse Bowen. And that's what I say that because he's taken it to a different level. He's out of the ring, a banquet, a beautiful plaque, recognition, a radio network to support this endeavorment. And we've also gone not just to the United States, not just honoring children. Now we're going worldwide with this. We're really taking a step higher. So if you have a story that you're part of the martial arts in America and he's fixing to announce the big announcement going worldwide with this, please send your information in, and you can contact me on Facebook, or you read the book that we've got so far. Go to Barnes & Noble, go to Amazon.com, or you can go to our dear friends at Century, which they also have the book also, Who's Who in the Martial Arts.com or Who's Who in the Martial Arts book at those locations. Now, my special guest tonight, and I say this because he's one of my original history generals. Back in the day when we created the Sport Karate Museum, he's one of the first guys I called. And he's just an incredible, incredible fighter and just one of those great guys. I'm talking about Mr. Roger Green. You know, he's a pioneer of great importance. You know, he's a fighter of extreme natural ability to annihilate his opponent. He was one of the elite fighters who and when you stepped in the ring with him, it was competition first. But the reality of stepping in and destroying his opponent and having a superb technique with it. That's right. That's Mr. Roger Green. You know, this, as I watch him through the years, you know, I feel this is somewhat what Mr. Joe Lewis, rest in peace, sir, passed on to him. And after all, Mr. Green was one of his first black belt, or was his first black belt, and the first recipient of the Joe Lewis Memorial Dragon Image Fighting Award, giving out to 5 outstanding fighters every year at the Living Legends Celebrity Roast. You know, Mr. Roger Green is an original history general. It was at the first Living Legends 8 years ago. You know, we will talk of his career as a fighter, a coach of champions, teaching his love for the Tracy organization that at one time, you know, it was a huge franchise success, representing the Tracy attitude of fighting and the famous checker optical illusion uniform, which we have. We actually have that at the Sports Karate Museum that he autographed, and it's hanging on the wall. I want you to enjoy this up-close and very personal interview with an icon of sport karate, my friend, special, original history general, Mr. Roger Green, a very, very dangerous black belt. Hey, brother, are you there, sir?
Yes, it's good to hear you.
Oh, wow, it's good to hear you too, sir. Wow, I'm so glad you could make the show. This is so, so cool to have you on the show. You know, as I said, you were at the very first Living Legends, and I knew I was calling everybody back then, and you knew me, but you didn't really know me, and you trusted the instinct of your friends telling you that it was going to be pretty cool, and then you played such an important part. So I'm so glad you're spending time with me tonight, but the very first thing I got to ask you is that, you know, how did you get started? Who influenced you? And when did you make black belt, and when did you get involved with Mr. Lewis? That's like 4 questions, okay? So, Mr. Green, you got the microphone, brother. Go right ahead.
Well, I began my training in San Jose under a gentleman named Robert Babich, who was a Korean stylist, but he had been a black belt under Don Buck, who was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Masayama's first black belt when he made his visit to this country years before. And
Yoki Kai, I believe it's Fred Buck or Don Buck. Exactly right. You're exactly right, sir. I know that history. Yes, sir. You're right.
Yeah. Don Buck was a real tiger. Bob Babich is one of those kind of guys that would every school has their little torture chamber. What they would do in Gundukwan is set you down in a low horse stance where the top of your thighs were level, your back was up straight, and you were focused on the point of your hand. And we didn't sit in that for 5 minutes. I sat in that position for over an hour at a time because he did.
Wow.
He would come to work early. He worked up in San Francisco, and so he could be closer to his instructor. Because Chung Nam, Park's senior student, and he was Korea's greatest fighter besides Park, and he just visited all the schools. And so he walked into Buck's school and wanted to work out. Well, he could do things they'd never seen. He was unbelievable. And many people in the Bay Area were wanting to figure out some way to get rid of him because he was going to take all their students away. Well, he didn't have to worry because he took a pretty vigorous approach as far as his training was concerned. In a 3-hour class, you might start off, you know, 30 minutes in that kimise, and then go on and train. He was a black belt. He heard about this guy, Park. He didn't know who he was. This was over in Korea. So he walked in and said he wanted to work out with him. So Park trimmed him. He couldn't touch Park with anything, but Park kept tagging him with the same solid fundamental stuff. And at the end of that class, he walked over, took his black belt off, and dropped it in a trash can, and walked back over and bowed to Park and said, "I would like to train with you." And so when he came back to the next class, he showed him that kimise, that low, low exercise. And he said, "Practice that." And so when the next class started, I think they were about 3 hours long, he dropped into that low horse and he sat in there for 3 hours. Well, Park did that with him for 3 months. And he would go to class, bow in, get in that position, stay there until he was told to stand up. And
that's an incredible story.
Well, it's not about strength. It's about strength of spirit. And Park was testing his spirit.
And so I wanted to ask you before we go into the war stories, because I got a few of them to ask you. I really want to in-depth. How old were you when you started martial arts? How old were you?
I was 18.
Sir?
I was 18 years old.
18. You got involved with Kyokushin Kai and Mr. Buck. And how'd you get involved with Mr. Lewis? That's the magical question I wanted to ask
That's the fascinating thing, that why I have such a love and respect for Al Tracy was he is the first guy who stepped out and said, instead of trying to be king of the hill and make everybody work for you for nothing, he developed a franchise system whereby he taught people how to manage the school professionally, key issues on traffic counts and all the things that you consider in business. And he sent a guy out here named Paul Healy, and he physically came out, helped me locate my school, and convinced me that it was a good system to go with. He didn't care what style it was. He knew my karate was pretty solid. I'd already worked with his black belts. And so here was the offer I had to look at. I was making a few dollars an hour, very low, in a testing laboratory at one of the major engineering firms. And Al Tracy said, "Why don't you open a school for us? You take a percentage, what you make, a small percentage, and you'll have Joe Lewis, the world champion, working with you as he's going to be our chief in charge of the physical performance of
Let me stop you there, Mr. Green. Let me stop you there just 1 second. So now, for the people who don't know what the Tracy organization is, Al Tracy and his brother, they came from Mr. Parker's system. Is that correct?
They were Parker students. There's three brothers. They have Will and Jim and Al.
Right, but, and they put schools all across the country. And if I'm not mistaken, their forte was private lessons. Is that correct? I mean, they were like the first guys to really emphasize private lessons.
Well, everybody came to the school, got private instruction along with their group instruction. And so they got individual help. If they needed special help on something or this or that, they could get it. It was like they got tutored.
I want to ask you a question because you're one of the founders of this group. Was it based upon like the Fred Astaire dance studios that was going on where they go in, they learn dance, and then you get the private lessons, how they made the money? I mean, is how it worked? I mean, to make
The thing that was different about them is they had the best fighter in the world,
Lewis,
to teach karate. They had you located in a place where you'd get traffic flow and
good
opportunity that way. They helped set up your advertising and even would negotiate leases for guys.
And back then, that was not done by the schools, right? Back then, that wasn't really done. I mean, ahead of the time.
They were out ahead of everybody on that. I remember them saying, we didn't think franchising would work when the Tracy brothers opened their franchises, but
yes,
this was the West Coast official Karate Illustrated Group. They said we didn't think their ideas would work, but they did work, and then they went on to other subjects. But
let's talk about your fighting career. Let's talk about the fact that Roger Green, back at what I said as your introduction, you were a dangerous fighter. I mean, and what made you such an aggressive fighter? What people said you were, but what made Roger Green tick when you walked into the ring?
Well, I wasn't there chasing trophies. I was testing my martial arts. I would line up with the toughest guy there, or the guy that had the highest rating or rep or whatever. Because
can I say something about that, sir, Mr. Green? I'll interrupt on that, because back in the day when you fought, and also when I fought, we had the choice of who we wanted to fight. We'd line up next to him. We're not like the computers today, where everybody, you don't know who you're going to fight, and that's cool. I guess that works. But back in the day, you got to choose, and some people would move. They didn't want to fight you. Is that what you're telling me too? I mean, that's what would happen, huh?
Well, I had a guy. I chased a guy all over the floor one time because every time he would look around, I'd be standing next to him, and he'd move, and I'd follow him to where he was, and he'd turn around, and there I'd be again. And finally, he went over to the promoter and got himself moved into another division. Now, I'll have to confess, I have a prejudice. It has nothing to do with the quality of a man's fighting, but a man who is wearing a black belt and taking financial remuneration for his instruction should not be a coward.
Yes, sir.
What you are speaks so loud I can't hear what you say. This guy was afraid of me. And, he was one of the guys that was one of the hot shots in this area. I won't bother mentioning his name. But when he started ducking me, he influenced three big decisions. Mike Dillard and Bobby Green. Bobby's one of my black belts that was Chuck Norris' bodyguard. And he had a lot of guys to choose from, so I felt very honored by that. Mike Dillard, his reputation as a warrior is proven in
absolutely
history. And what this guy did, he spent so much time ducking me, he ducked into the other side of the bracket. So I wouldn't theoretically face you until the last match. Unfortunately, one of my heavyweights, this is the heavyweight division, was in that bracket, and he's kind of got that Oklahoma cowboy tough mentality. I mean, he's one of those guys that's tough when he walked in the door already. And he saw that, and it bothered him more than it does me. And he turned that guy every which way but loose. It was pretty funny. He didn't injure him, but he sure gave him a rough afternoon. I think it went through a couple of uniforms. He just shredded them off him. And
back then, he used to shred a lot of uniforms by grabbing and ripping them, by throwing them down and whatever.
They just it's
unheard of nowadays. Well,
they didn't make the geese strong enough to be manhandled the way we did, because we weren't. They have rules in most divisions of against purposeless grabbing.
Yes.
Well, we refer to it as my turn. We used grab the guy to control his center, and so we could punch him, break his center, punch him again, move him another way, punch him another, and sweep him, and so on. So you maintain control of your opponent by neutralizing with maybe a attacking sweep from long range.
You sound like a master instructor, and I love that about you, because, even when we talk about old karate or sport karate, you always come back into teaching. And mentioning that, you got some amazing champions that you taught, and I know one of them is sitting next beside you, and I want to say hello to her. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Gary. Good to talk to you.
Well, it's good to nice to talk to you, too, and your lovely husband. So I'm going to ask you, Mr. Green, can you tell me a little bit about Karen's career? I know we talked in the pre-interview about something she did a while back when she was fighting in her career, where she dropped a couple of fighters. I like that story. You should share that with my listeners.
Well, women's division, there was something that we males did to them that I don't know why they ever did it. I didn't believe in it. I was always supportive of fair treatment, not preferential treatment. And
yes,
they'd have a women's division, and they'd throw the advanced women in one division. They'd throw brown belts and black belts together. Now, they thought somehow that was fair. Well, in my opinion, you're insulting a black belt. She was a third-degree black belt, and she
yes.
has – these girls were big, strong girls, but they were brown belts. They're brown belts, and they were thrown in. And so Karen gave them all a welcome to the brown belt or black belt division, but she stayed downstairs with her techniques. She went to the body so hard she knocked all three of them out three times in a row with body punches. In other words, they were down for, it took about 4 or 5 minutes to stand them up and get them air pumped back in, and then she'd send it on its way again. She'd knock it into the next zip code. So she threw 9 punches and had 9 body KOs, and that's when their instructor came to me and asked if I could get her to lighten up. And I said, no, I wouldn't ask her to. And that's one of those times we'd run into an authority crisis anyway, because, you know, the message we were sending women in those days was, there's no difference between a brown belt and a black belt. And if you're a third-degree black belt, somebody throws a, walks in there, ring with you wearing a brown belt, he's fighting a pretty good-sized hunk out of a pretty good-sized candy bar. And if he's not up to
yes.
it, that's kind of his problem. Whenever I had any student fight up a division, I had one young man that was a 4-time national champion. He'd won the nationals as a brown belt, so I didn't let him fight anymore as a brown belt. But I gave him a black belt to wear in the ring before his formal test. So,
yes, sir. Well, I want to ask Karen one more question. Karen, I've got to ask you one more question now. Have you been to a tournament lately, say within 4 or 5 years,
no.
3 years?
Oh, no.
You haven't?
No.
When was the last time you went to a
tournament?
I mean, I'm not talking about fighting. I'm just talking about watching.
No, I really haven't.
Well, I was going to ask you if you've seen the change involved, because it really has changed and compared to what the women were fighting back in, even 10 years ago. But, okay, but some of the women that you fought, so I go to another question, did they think of it like self-defense, or did they think of like, you know, points? I mean, kind of like what Roger
said,
would you just...
Most of the women that I fought were in this area, Oklahoma region, Arkansas, Kansas, and they didn't really point fight. It was pretty intense. It was pretty there wasn't what you'd call light contact. They said that it was going to be light contact, but in this region there wasn't light contact. So it was
you know, the legends are from that area. I imagine they all came from different roots of legends, like Mr. Green and Mr. Harris and all those guys, you know, they're in that area. So the reason why the fighting was
always
yes,
it's always had pretty heavy contact. I mean, it wasn't malicious. It's just,
right.
It was just rough, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, Mr. Green, I got to ask you, a lot of people ask me on the emails, they say, if you get Mr. Green there, you got to ask me about that uniform that you guys wore, the Tracy's wore. Now, I've been told that you wore it to make it like an optical illusion. Am I correct, or what's the real reason behind that checkered
blue? There was a lot behind it.
Okay.
Initially,
cool.
The traditional stylist. Everybody kind of wants to have it their way, and the the typical traditional stylist, Kibaru and Shotokan and so on, they only wore white uniforms when they competed. And you weren't supposed to have anything on your uniform. Of course, they could have Japanese written on their uniform, and that was okay. But nobody else was supposed to have. And then the black gis were popular, particularly among the Kempo people and some other systems. And it was kind of a little bit of an affront to the traditionalists. And so we came walking in with a checkered gi as a whip. We were being a little bit irreverent as far as our approach toward uniform. But the real reason behind the gi, if you were moving, it would help disguise your initial move. But the real deal was that only people that got checkered gis were tigers. They had a tiger in the tank. And so it was a kind of a subtle backdoor intimidation issue. You stepped in the ring and you were facing guys like Terry Pittington, grandmaster, great fighter, Joe Louis, fighters of that ilk. And they were tough. And so...
Speaking of tough, who was your toughest opponent, Mr. Green? Who was the guy that gave you the toughest round? I mean, the one that you knew that you had to fight hard. I know you fought hard, everybody. I know you did, because I know you're hard. But who was your toughest mentally? The one, was it Mr. Lewis?
I think probably my toughest fight and the most fun I had in the ring was my match with Jerry Pittington at 72 Grand National. Jerry is
cool. I talked to him today. Isn't that cool? That's powerful. I talked to him today for almost an hour.
I love Jerry. He's not as strong. His feet are, kicking techniques are good. His sweep.
Yes, sir.
His strategic control of the ring and fighting. And he and Joe had, when we showed up at that event in 72, Joe looked around. There was the Grand Nationals was kind of a who's who tournament. Everybody went to it. And Joe looked around and said, well, the only one I'm worried about getting around is Jerry Pittington. Well, then, guess who got, my second match was Jerry Pittington. So, I mean, I couldn't have been more excited. And so we had a lot of fun. And
Tracy's ever put together a team of you and Mr. Lewis and somebody else, or? Was there ever a Tracy team in the box?
I thought about it. Quite honestly, Gary, I didn't want to spend every weekend going to a tournament.
Yes, sir.
I traveled and fought because I wanted to see how my karate stacked up. I didn't step up to somebody and say, I heard his technique is real good. Why don't you try this? For example, first time I fought Fred Wren. He'd been in there was one. Man, did we have fun. We just got in there and rock and rolled. And I studied the film of that match, and I saw why he nailed me, and then I nailed him when he did it the next time. And I did it spontaneously.
Well, you know what? You just made me think about something. At the very first Legends, Mr. Wren was there, of course, and you were there. Did you guys ever talk about that fight? I'm making you think 20 years ago. I'm sorry. You did?
Yeah.
Cool.
The funny part about Fred was when I told him that he got that he was the first tournament match I ever had was against Fred Wren with Jim Harrison at center.
Wow.
It was fun. And I thought, I'm so glad that I got a chance to fight someone of that caliber. My first five matches in martial arts, four of them were in the top 20.
Wow.
So I began at the top just because if they were the guys that were the real tigers, that's who I wanted to fight. And I remember going to Florida area, and I'm blanking on the gaze right now. The guy was the number one rated guy, and he'd been in a real bad car accident. So the number two guy was there, and I walked up to him, and I said, so-and-so, and he said, yes, I am. I said, I'm Roger Green. You're who I came out here to fight. Why don't you and I go first round? Now, I didn't think of it like I was trying to play a head game with him, but I guess it kind of sounded to him like I was. And but my point was, I didn't fly across the country to fight some guy that was, you know, not any kind of a challenge. I mean, I'm not trying to sound arrogant, but, you know, the guys that are the beginners, it's like when you pick a surgeon.
It was a different time and a different era. The new people that listen are from even the 2000 and above. It's hard for people to understand it. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was just a different time. It wasn't better than it is now. We just had a different era and a different attitude when we fought.
But you were there to fight.
Yes, sir.
And it was the rules in this part of the country were, I used to go say, well, we have an excessive body contact rule in this area, this region. If the back of the gi jumps when you punch him in the body, you get a point. If your fist comes through the gi and out the back side of it, we would probably take away a half point for excessive contact.
Well, and one of the neat stories is that I – go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the point I was getting at is that when somebody tagged you, nobody had to tap you on the shoulder and say he scored. Texas,
yes,
Oklahoma. I mean, when I went to my first tournament down in Arkansas, these guys' skill level was only fair to Party Fighting, but they were hitting each other hard. They had to stop the match two times. Sometimes pretty much during the match and mop up the blood and continue the match. I mean, they would just stand there toe-to-toe and just mash each other. And they weren't used to seeing some of the high finesse stuff that I was throwing at them that I'd learned from Joe Lewis. And had a tremendous advantage with respect to footwork and timing. And they were a cakewalk, and it kind of shocked them. The other thing is, you know, when you've done martial arts, you can appreciate that you don't really know how fast you are. I mean,
yes,
we didn't have all the special timing. And one time a guy walked up to me, John Townsley, you know John, and he said,
"Yes, sir, I do.
Your hands are really improved. What have you done?" And I said, well, I've just been working out on, you know, on a couple of moves. He said, how much? Well, I said about 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I said, it worked pretty well for me. And I was, you know, chewing them up. Now you see that very same move being done, and it's done pretty close to the way I did it because I passed the knowledge on to others. My first instructor said, the only way to find out if you're any good is to teach somebody everything you know. And that guy in Florida, at the end of our match, I'd hit him 6 times with the same technique. And his mouth was bloodied up a little bit, but he wasn't hurt. And took a hold of my hand, and he pointed his finger at these little leather half gloves. And he said, you know, these darn things don't taste very good at all. And he kind of smiled.
Yeah, that's great.
Friends. So, I mean, now I go to an event. They want to call a medical team in to check a guy out because somebody knocked the wind out of him.
Right,
and
right. It's really
funny. They should do something about it. That guy's vicious. I mean, it is a combat art.
Yes,
part of.
Well, I think we'll take a break here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of your friends who invented that combat art, some of your personal friends, and we're going to play the Legends name game. So stay tuned. Stay real close, Karen, you and Mr. Green, and I'll be right back, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, God bless you. We're with Mr. Roger Green and his lovely wife, Karen, and we're interviewing one of the true legends and pioneers of sport karate in America, and also one of the people that really introduced real fighting in sport martial arts. And of course, he was under Mr. Joe Lewis. I want to talk about some of the upcoming shows. I'm really excited about this. This is our second year, and we are very proud of being an award-winning radio network. And I just got to plug my co-host people, or the people that really help me every week get motivated to do this show. And I'm talking about my the lady that does a show on her own, amazing show, Karen Herdman, Eden Herdman, a author of high acclaim, also a writer for Taekwondo Times, writer for MA Success, just an amazing lady. Get tuned into her show on the AMMA Masters Network. Also, Mr. Jesse Bowen, Hansi Jesse Bowen, the producer of my show. He has a mindfulness show and so many things in the works, but he takes you inside the mind of the martial artist to make you a stronger mental person every time you learn how to punch and kick. Make sure you tune into his show. And then we've got a really special show now, a spiritual show, which is on Sunday, with Mrs. Bowen, who is a minister, and a very, very a unique show that talks about the spiritual growth within the martial arts and herself and growing. So stay tuned to the AMA Masters Network. And my show that comes up every Tuesday, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, Texas time, 8:30 day. Hey, don't forget 7:30 Mountain Time, and, of course, Pacific Time, 6:30. Our next show, March 6th, will be Mr. Joe Gillum. He's one of the, not founders, but one of the early guys who helped direct the AOK, which is the organization in Texas, one of the great fighters also. March 13th, Mr. Don DeVries and Mr. Richard McClain will be talking about hosting the one and only Bill Walsh Superfoot Tournament that they do in Cleveland every year. And the Sport Credit Museum is a big part of that. But Don DeVries will talk to you about what's going on, going up to the music part now, one of the largest events, and we're also going to be introducing Bubble Kumite. That's right, a big event for the children. March the 20th, Mr. Daryl Stewart, Mr. Billy Sweeney, Mr. Jeff Goss. That's right, talking about the NBL, where they're at, what they did, where they're going, what the future is. Mr. Goss, by the way, is the new president of the American NBA. So our NBL will be talking about that particular venture of that sport karate. We're also coming back on March the 27th, Mr. Buddy Hudson, entrepreneur from Arkansas, one of the people who made the APA very popular in the 80s. And then April 3rd, Mr. Jerry Trimble, the Golden Boy. That's right, from Atlanta, who also turned actor, best known to be a play detective with Mr. Al Pacino in the famous movie Heat. Mr. Jerry Trimble will be here April the 3rd. April 10th, people said that the greatest traditional black belt kata performer in the world was this man. And we're going to have him on the air, Mr. John Chow. J-Dog, we call him, Jason Holmes, the promoter of the Jamal Nationals, NBL national event, will be on April the 17th. April 24th, Mr. Steve Melton and Long Star Eagle Fighting Arts, and the retired policeman who does karate and was actually a student of the great Ed Daniels. May the 1st, Dr. Tig Gamardella, one of the true jiu-jitsu experts in America and true historians of all martial arts. Amazing, amazing, amazing man. May the 8th, we've got a show of the 70s. We've got women. And Karen, if Karen's listening, I'd love Karen to be on the show, too. We've got Karen Slatcher. We've got Sharon Scrimmage Wong. We've got all kinds of women calling in for this and talking about fighting from the 70s and the 80s of the women fighting. And then May 15th, the one and only, the mentor of the Sport Karate Museum, someone who's been with me from the very beginning, Mr. Joe Corley, talking about the rejuvenation of the PKA and the vision that he had back in the 70s when he was fighting, turned sport karate and karate into just an amazing adventure. Just, hey, the Battle of Atlanta. That's all I got to say. Joe Corey, Battle of Atlanta. Amazing man. May the 22nd, Jennifer Branch, and we'll be talking about her career with Roy Kirvin and her friend Steve Fisher, who we've lost a couple years ago, but her influence in Texas has been amazing. And May the 29th, Kimpo Joe Rivala. And we're going to be growing every week with new people. So stay tuned. Now, I'd like to bring back my special guest, and that's Mr. Roger Green and his lovely wife, Karen. And we're going to be playing a game called the Legends Name Game. This is something that we did, 2 years ago. And we invented it where we throw a name out there, and for about 2 to 3 minutes, kind of talk about that person. And we've got quite a list here talked about. So, Mr. Green, Karen, are you there?
We are.
I wanted to throw some things at you, and you guys kind of talk about them freely. And some of them we prepared for, some of them are parts unknown. That's what my show's called. So here we go. I'm going to throw one at you that I didn't prepare for, but he's a real good friend of the museum and he's a dear friend of yours. And he's a good friend of mine, too. Amazing guy. Mr. George Clark, fireman. Talk about him a little bit.
Big George.
The shield knockout punch. George. Yes. Knockout
George,
artist. That's what he is. Yes.
George came out of Harrison School, but Jim always told me that George knew how to. He was a fighter when he walked in the door. He just taught him how to clean up some of the stuff that he needed to clean up and expand his dimension. But he had a tiger in his tank. We became good friends. And we first got acquainted. It was kind of a funny incident. He did a spinning back fist, and this guy's nose moved over a ways. And I was the center referee, and I called a point. And there was a lot of throw. And then it was a Roger Carpenter's tournament. It was a contact in every division, always was. And he said, what about this? Don't you think this is excessive? And I said, no. And they said, look at his nose. And I said, I saw the technique. I had a real good see. It wasn't a high penetration technique. And this guy was standing there in front of me, and I made eye contact with him, and I said, that nose was already broken when you showed up here, wasn't it? And his eyes dropped down, and he said, yes, sir. I said, so he didn't break your nose. It was broken when you got here, and a light shot would have done that, don't you think? And he said, yes. I said, okay, we've cleared that up. Now, next, and that was the end of that. But I said, he just did, and we were always joking about he didn't give, he gave him a point because the guy had a soft nose. And that's what the way I put it. But it was true. You know, you can get your nose looking.
I think George is a class guy. He's not only the firefighter, but he's the Green Beret and served our country, and he's just in a tremendous attitude what we have through the museum. I mean, yes, he's I love George. Yes, good guy. So let's throw another one out there. Let's talk about, we talked about a little bit, Mr. Robert Babbage. Tell me about him a little bit.
Robert Babbage was a 5'7", 8", 137-pound, kind of a little on the scrawny, bony side, chain-smoking, Slovakian, absolutely the most blinding speed I have ever seen. I have never seen his equal. I've figured out a way of timing by how much of a second was used up in the execution of my front hand technique.
Yes, sir.
I was starting my technique, and I was making contact with somebody's face in 3/100 of a second. So because of the way I timed my takeoff, I was already moving. By the time they responded, it was already there and gone. Babbage was in a whole other level. And he never came out on the deck with us and showed off, you know, watch this, never. But we learned that he never allowed anybody to score the first point. So he always went to a kind of a zen mindset, and then he would settle down and work with you and do. But once we learned that, we threw every kind of wild-eyed concoction we could come up with, and we never got anywhere near it. I moved in and threw a body punch, hard one, and he sprung from a cat stance vertically clear out of my line of sight, my peripheral vision. It was like a kung fu movie. Poof! The guy disappeared, and he was up in a little ball in the air, and he'd moved off about a 30-degree angle off the line, and he rotated in the air and fired a sidekick, touched the side of my neck lightly with the knife edge of his foot, recoiled it, and then landed.
That's incredible. But, you know, for the people who are listening, We're talking about a style called Kyokushinkai, which was developed by a gentleman named Matsuyama. And if, for people who do folklore, he was a gentleman that supposedly killed bulls with his bare fists and shuto, the horns and stuff. But the style of Kyokushinkai is bare knuckle knockout fighting. And no equipment, just a cup, maybe a mouthpiece, but that's it. And it's just really real fighting. So that's where he's talking about, that type of lineage.
Joe Lewis and I one time sat down talking about, if somebody was going to send you a black belt, a beginner, a first-degree black belt from any system, what system would you like him from? And I said, well, half of me would say Kempo, because they're not bound up tight with style. There is a self-defense art, first and foremost. Or Kyokushin, because they're rock solid. They got 9 speeds forward and 0 reverse. And they're, for raw material, for an up-and-coming black belt, I'd be happy as heck if I could get a student with that kind of attitude. And they're a good, strong, fundamental style. We did lower stances. Like I say, when Karen came to me, she had good kicks. There wasn't anything terribly wrong with them, but she was fighting too high for my... So I put her switch size, and I dropped her lower in her stance. And she said, when do I get to spar and prepare for tournament? I said, you don't. She said, she looked like I was abusing her. She said, why not? I said, I've already seen you fight, and I don't like what I see. We're going to get your hands squared away, then we'll see about tournaments. And it took me about 2 years, and she became a puncher that she could hit a heavy bag, Everlast Supreme, top of the line leather heavy bag, and fold that bag in half with her punch.
Real karate do, without a doubt.
Yep.
Let's go to the next guy. Let's go to Choi Lee Park. You mentioned him in the pre-interview. Who was he? Choi Park? Yeah, am I saying it correct? I'm sorry.
Park passed away a couple of years ago. He was the founder of Dondequan. He was a black belt when I was 2 years old.
Okay. Wow.
He traveled back and forth across the border when he during the war. I don't know what.
Wait. Are you pushing what? Are you pushing 40 now, or are you? What, 45?
Well,
I forget.
Somebody said, asked me how old I was, and said, well, I just had a birthday. I'm either 72 or 27. I think 27.
Okay.
I kind of forget.
Yes, sir. I want a couple more, and these two are, to me, are very important. And I'm talking about a real good friend of ours, and, he's been there from the very beginning with the Sport Karate Museum, and he believed in me. And he still does. And we're talking about our dear friend, Mr. Mike Dillard. And talk about him a little bit. And by the way, he contacted me from the Olympics this year. He was in Korea, and he text messaged me. So I bet he just got back. But tell me a little bit about Mike. Tell me about Mike.
So Mike was one of the guys that was watching when his instructor was running all over the deal. But he had begun karate under a guy named Doshop Chi, over at U.
Yes.
And that was, he was a Kondaquan. And so Mike came to me to study with me, and I found out that he'd started. So he's been in Kondaquan from the get-go. He's worked with other people, don't get me wrong, but... I remember, a punch that I'll take some credit for having tuned to a high level, and that was that running step punch that I do. We call it a step through. It's a reverse punch with a step fall through, and I have a lot of variations, which allows me a huge advantage and tremendous amount of power. Now you see it, and I'm starting to see that right hand lead in professional boxing, MMA, and there was a time when you just didn't throw a right-hand lead Well,
and you taught that to Mike? Is that what you're saying? You passed that on to him?
Yeah, well, Mike was active competitively, and he fought a real tough fighter, and he tried to play kind of a speed kick game. And I told him
People know Mr. Dillard as being the owner of Century. That's fine. But the point of it is, he was a great fighter. And you passed on a lot of knowledge to him. That's cool.
Well, when I worked with him, he kind of became, because of his experience and his natural leadership, he kind of became our competitive team at events. And
sure.
So in my absence or whatever, I see Mike, talk to Mike, whatever. And when he fought a bunch from Minnesota, he decided to try to fight him his way, and it didn't work out real well for him. And I told him that I preferred next time he might give mine a try. That was a kind of
He did something right. He's involved with the largest organization, or owns the largest organization in the world, the Martial Arts Equipment. If I'm not mistaken,
well,
they're just now the publisher of Black Belt Magazine. Really come a long way from the garage working us. Absolutely.
Well, Mike is our first in-house grandmaster. I just promoted him tonight. He's the head of our competitive group. He's our number two man behind me rank.
Okay.
And he went back and fought the same guys that was Longstreet and Norbloom and that bunch from Minnesota, who were good fighters and talented kickers and so on, and I beat them all 3-0. I said, I like my way better. He said, yeah.
That's great. Well, you know, he got the experience of legend last year. He got to come and see the museum display and cut the experience of legends, and he actually got the Joe Louis Award, so that's cool. And speaking of Joe Louis, now this is my highlight of the Legends name game. You know, we lost him a few years back, and two people every year, Mr. Corley gives the Eternal Warrior Award, and I give out the Dragon Image Award in Mr. Louis's name. And I want to ask you bluntly, because you know you live with him, trained with him, was with him. What was he like as a fighter? Was he really as good as people say he is? Of course, I know that answer.
He was better.
Please share that with me.
He was better, Gary. He had he had it all. Some guys have a lot of it. Jeff Smith is another guy who is nearly in that position. Hand, either foot, upside down, right side up. He's a tiger. But Joe's in a class by himself, because not only was he tactically brilliant, he was strategically brilliant. He had incredible footwork. And, you know, he taught me that running step punch. It was an arduous journey. He took me behind the grandstands and gave me about a 10-minute quick lesson up behind the grandstands, and I went home and practiced it for 6 months. And I had to make some changes, and I was excited about his next visit, because he came through my school. Whichever way he crossed the country, he hit my school. We'd become close by then. And I said, you know, that step-through punch, I've been working on something. He goes, yeah, we're doing this now, boom, boom. And he did exactly what I was going to show him. So we had arrived on different roads to the same destination in terms of making it a less dangerous move to make that right-hand commitment on the first move. And we added some boxing principles that are also taught in the kata, namely MP or Yumbi. And we put a little subtle bob weave as we closed. So we were changing direction toward the guy, to the side, and to the other side. And one of my students was 5'6", fighting the guy 6'5" for the national championship, grand champion, and he was down 2-0. He looked at me a little bewildered, because this big guy was very quick with his front hand, and I just did a little subtle move with my head to kind of remind him, you know, where are you? He was a little flip-flop. And he, this guy was enough taller and bigger than he was, that he, when he got in where he, they were shoulder to shoulder, he threw a ridge hand straight overhead as he rotated to the left and hit the guy three times in a row and beat him. And the guy would look at him like, how did you get there? And then he'd do it to him again. And I said, well, when I teach the technique at other schools, because like I say, I give stuff away because it's good stuff. And I'm here to show them. And I said, there's a couple of nobody boxers that have used this. I've seen them use it. You probably don't know them. They're kind of unknown. Roberto Duran and Muhammad Ali. And he used it on the list.
I don't know those names. Roberto Duran and Muhammad Ali, of course. One more question, sir. How good was that sidekick? I heard stories. Stories that when the heavyweights would line up, let me finish, please. When they would line up, he'd go through the heavyweights like butter, but he would destroy people with that sidekick. How true was that, Mr. Green? How true?
Well, I'll give you a tale that'll kind of clear it up. I'm hard to move.
Yes.
I get in a low, strong stance. No one has ever swept me in the ring and broken my stance. So I caught Joe in our first workout one time where I caught him in his tracks and nailed him. I didn't hit him, but, I mean, I scored a real solid point on him. And he kind of growled his approval, you know, with a kind of a nod in his head. And he shuffled backwards a little bit. Well, when he shuffled backwards, I didn't realize he was lining me up with a doorway. He kicked me across through the doorway. So that was about 20 feet. And then he went through that doorway. And that next room that he kicked me through was 8 feet across. And I hit that far wall pretty quickly. So he kicked me about almost 30 feet with his sidekick. And, you know, here's the fun part working with Joe. People think that it's rough being in the ring with him for 2 minutes or 3 minutes. We'd go on, we'd teach a seminar together, and then we'd go out there and go for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And he didn't get tired, so I couldn't. And, I mean, you talk about high challenge, and he'd push you and push you and push. He never was abusive. He never injured me. And one of the things I really loved about him, he was truly there to be the teacher, not to feed it, pump his ego. It really, when I found out I broke a couple of his ribs the first time we ever worked out, I felt bad. And somebody called me and told me that he was angry about it. So my attitude is always, if you're looking for me, I'll be easy to find. And so I went to St. Louis.
You know, right now, I know Mr. Lewis. He's listening to our conversation right now. I know he is, because I had to know him.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I went outside, and when I quietly said, "I understand that you received a rib injury, and I want you to know that it wasn't intentional. I know you could have injured me and didn't, but I want to apologize." And he laughed it off. He wasn't mad at me. He thought he couldn't be injured. I was the only guy that ever heard him in the ring. That's why when he introduced me to his kickboxing group, he said, "This man here is the hardest puncher I've ever faced." Boy, I'll carry that compliment to my grave, because
that's cool. Yeah. I mean, a compliment like that from Mr. Lewis, that's more than cool.
Pray.
Well, I've got to ask you a question, and you know, like I said, we're just on a little time schedule here, but I've got to ask you a couple more questions. It's really important. One is that you were at the very first Legends in 1999 when, you know, you didn't really know what I was doing, but you followed me from day one, and you're here with me right now. What's it like knowing that the history is being protected, one warrior at a time, and being a part of that as a history general, I can count on you and Karen to help me through the mentorship. How do you feel about that, Mr. Green?
Well, I have nothing but the highest praise and respect for what you've done. Somebody needed to, and you did. I was behind you right from the get-go. I like the fact that when you recalled our prior meeting. Roger Green,
yes,
there he is, one of the last of the real animals. And I turned
yes,
around
sir.
There you were with a big smile on your face. And, you know, you were singing the my music because I think the fighting should be more real. I'm not for full contact, bare knuckle. I fought full contact, bare knuckle. It's a little hard on the hardware, particularly the bone structure of people's face and so on. But they need to do their sit-ups when they come to this part of the country. Because when we poke them to the body, they need to either train to take a body shot or stay home. And even then, it won't help always.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. That's a double question to you and Karen both, because Karen's there too. Again, how important it is that the history is kept alive, what you guys did, instead of just doing it, just making it happen. I mean, how important it is to let people realize that there was an establishment and a pioneership before sport karate even have a tournament this weekend. They owe people. How important is that, Karen?
Well, in my opinion, it's dang important, Gary, because people are already forgetting. Now, again, everybody has a different attitude about what people are doing. They have a little different point of view. They're scoring
yes.
0.6 inches away. You don't do that. You're a tiger in the ring. I've watched you, you know. You went out and did a real basic form, but it had more steam on every move. And one of the traditionalists came over to me and squawked about the fact that I gave you such a high score.
I wasn't going to bring that up, Mr. Green, yes, sir. I wasn't going to bring that up, but I got to say something really cool. 1993, Dallas, Texas, USKF, George Anderson's Nationals. You were a judge. I think Thomas LaPuppet was a judge. McConney was a judge.
Yep.
Alex Plusborn Steinberger was a judge, and there was like 67 competitors. I had a fourth round seed, and I won the gold medal. And I appreciate that so much because you did come up to me afterwards, and you said I had a very basic form, but it was pure, and that really made me very happy.
Oh, absolutely! I wouldn't have wanted to have been standing in front of one of those punches. See, you know, and that formed our bond right from the get-go. When I see guys come up to do weapons in black belt division with toys,
yes, sir.
You know, I'm checking the weapons, and this guy holds up a pair of commas made out of wood, and I pulled back away from him like he was trying to hand me a dirty diaper, and I said, "That's not a weapon, that's a toy." When you're in the black belt division, we're giving consideration to how you handle this weapon because you have to control an edge and use it in a manner that edge would cut. This should be a sharp sickle. Otherwise, don't come over here in the black belt division. Stay in the amateur division. But
you know, Mr. Green, I want to share something with you. I there's a reason why I'm interviewing tonight, and I'm going to share this with you because, you know, I could have waited for another interviewer to introduce this, but I wanted a real fighter being interviewed to understand that what I've done, and I'm going to share this with you. I have created a thing called Kata Wars about 3 years ago, and you had to have 100 first places to be invited, and you had to have 100 first places to be a judge. And it's done very successful. I mean, it's really incredible, and it has its own life and everything. But I'm a fighter, as you know. I did all that other stuff just so I could hit people. So I wanted to do the same thing in fighting. And I put together 20 mentors, some of your friends, and I'd like to say their names and who they are, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do this year and introduce. Please bear with me because it's going to be the introduction of fighting at the Living Legends. So here we go. I put together mentors and history generals of the advisory committee for this idea. I've been talking to them for off and on 5 to 6 months, and they're not any particular order, but Judge Roy D. Kirvin, pioneer SWAT, top 10 fighter. Jerry Fontenot, pioneer fighter for real champion of quality. Charlotte Hoffman Emerson, Texas protege of Chuck Lovin. Hal Hilzebeck, point fighter, legendary kickboxer. Mr. Jim Anderson, the fighting Irishman, champion of life. Mr. Steve Parks, fighter of life. Mr. Jerry Pennington, pioneer fighter, dangerous, fast, and dangerous. Keith Vitale, fighter, three-time national champion. Dan Anderson, over 80 grand championships in his career. Danny McCall, pioneer fighter, pioneer full contact fighter, animal. Jennifer Branch, teenage fighter, adult fighter, Roy Curvin protege. Mr. Bob White, pioneer, one of the most dangerous Kenpo fighters there was. James Miller, Jim Miller, pioneer, another dangerous fighter of bad intention. Mr. Jim Harrison, inventor of the term blood and guts karate. Mr. Daryl Lassiter, pioneer, old-time Chicago kick-your-butt fighter. Mr. George Minshew, pioneer. Mr. Alan Kelly, pioneer, history general, producer, and fighter. Mr. Mike Dillard, pioneer fighter, founder of the NKC circuit. Mr. David E. Chambers, six-time Golden Greek winner. Mr. Jim Buten, pioneer of Texas, original history general. Mr. James Woodson, Ready Karate Illustrated fighter. Karen Slatcher, pioneer Shorinu fighter. Mr. Joe Gillum, pioneer fighter. Mr. Steve Gibson, Stuvasar recipient, pioneer fighter. Mr. Neil Hardin, master instructor of Kenpo, very dangerous. Hawk Hardy, blood and guts pioneer. Mr. Willie Hicks, world champion, the only man to ever win four NBL World Grand Championships. Mr. Mike Pacheco, NASCAR national champion. And Sonny Uno. Now, what I've said all those names for is the very reason. They've been my mentors for this particular idea. What I'm going to do is have an invitational only, America's Challenge, September the 28th and 29th, Black Belt Tag Team Point Fighting, the Battle of the Sexes, America's Challenge. That's right. What we're going to do is something pretty cool. We are going to simply put together eight fighters, four men, four women. They will not fight each other, but there'll be two separate teams. The two men fighters, two male teams will fight each other, two female fighters teams will fight each other. From the very beginning, every fighter, all eight fighters, will be going for the cumulative techniques, being judged on the side by other fighters who have also won 100 fights or more, will be judging them and tallying their points. So the one with the most techniques at the end of the match, which is 2 and 3 minutes, 2 3-minute bouts, will get a bonus. Now, here's the fun part. It's tag team. So imagine, Mr. Green, imagine that Mr. Wallace and Mr. Norris is on the same team, and the other team is Mr. Roger Green and Joe Lewis. You guys got a pre-played plan. You fake a backhand strike at Mr. Norris's head. Same time you touch Mr. Lewis's hand, Mr. Lewis jumps across, sidekick, knocks Mr. Norris out of the ring. 2 points, Roger Green, Joe Lewis. Tag team fighting in a way that's never been done before. Also, what we're going to do is that the judges are all going to be guys who have won 100 first places or more. And the fighters who are coming, the eight fighters, they must all have won 100 first places or more. So it's going to be an elite, elite thing that's never been done before. And it's going to be interesting. I'm putting the rules together, complete intricate rules, and that's just the test base. But here's one more thing to add. I'm having the Howard Jackson rule implicated. As you know, he was your friend, my friend too. Howard invented the blitz. He could close the gap better than anybody. It was amazing. He was fast, as we talked about in the interview, how fast you were, just fast. So that means now the judges will know, the fighters will know, most importantly, the center referee will know, and he has no say-so. He just has to break the fight. But the spectators will know that if a fighter can hit the other fighter 3 to 4 to 5 times before the center referee stops the fight, the judges will award that person 3 points. So the Howard Jackson rule will be introduced. What do you think about that? Pretty interesting, huh?
I think it is. I think it's going to be exciting.
I'm not glad. You know, and then the thing about it is I don't have – it's not Gary Lee. It has nothing to do with Gary Lee. I put together 20 fighters, as I mentioned, and I'm not name dropping. Those guys are my friends or someone that I've watched for 30 years grow into great fighters. Every one of them are great fighters. So I bug them, as you know. I'm on the phone a lot. or email, and they've been pestered by me for 5-6 months just to get this out there so I could introduce it. So
well,
I think it's going
to
work. I'm excited about it.
Nothing creates excitement like game matching.
Yes, sir.
And frankly, you're in a great position to do something like that because you are a warrior. You've done the blood and guts fighting. You're going to have the rules set up where it's going to be rough, but it's not going to be unreasoning.
Exactly. And it'll
gonna
be clean.
It's going to be exciting. And if you got the kind of officials you're talking about, I think that you're going to have
first places or more before you even ask to be. Yes,
I see it generating some real excitement.
Well, I'm excited
I've
had resumes come in, sir. I've got 4 women that want to do it, and I had 12 guys contact me when I did it about 4 weeks ago and put it out there. And I have chosen one of those 12 guys already, and it's going to be Jason Dog Holmes, one of the great fighters under Cecil Peoples. You remember Cecil Peoples and Bill Rozaki? Yeah, that's who he trained with, and he's a showman. And so I do have one guy already, so I'm excited. And I'm working on the fighters now. So I'll keep you informed, and I wanted to introduce it on a great fighters interview, and you definitely are a great fighter. Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think it's a brilliant idea. I think that you're the guy that can make it happen. And just like your museum, I'm going to be behind you right from the get-go. I mean, I drove guys crazy. I was on people all the time. I'm sure you heard.
Yes, sir.
You know, that belt and uniform of mine is not a gi. It's my personal blood, sweat,
yes,
and tears. There's blood stains
on it. You left a blood stain on it for me. Yes.
Yeah.
It's one of the few uniforms I have that still has blood on it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And you know that belt worn out.
I got to say this before we go off the air. I want to say this to you. I love you. I love you for what you are. What you've done for us, for sport karate, the inspiration that you've given so many people. I watched you at the Gathering of Eagles and of course, the Last Man Standing. And I see the people that come in that really idolize you and what you've done. And the one thing I want to say in this show, if anybody who listens to the show, they get one thing, and I'm sure they picked it up. You are a master of passing on technique within the realm of sport karate back in that time. In other words, I could tell by just talking about what you did, whether it was brutal or not, you were teaching. It's very, 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 very intellectual talking to you about point karate, and I felt that. And I can imagine what your students feel when you're actually passing on the knowledge. You can imagine what Karen felt or anybody that had the lucky, what Mr. Dillard, who was around you, that
That's
picked
it.
Up on you. So thank you.
Joe and I shared the same love for fighting using science, the science of fighting. I took that step. I spent 6 or 7 months working till I was knocking the wind out of guys that were holding the bag.
Right.
That little bag.
I can tell you, Mr. Green, thank you so much for the evening. And I appreciate it so much. And, you know, God bless you. And happy birthday, belated, but happy birthday to one of the great pioneers of martial arts. And I will be talking to you real soon. Okay, sir?
Thank you. Thank you for what you do, Gary.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
We love you.
I love you too, Mr. Green. I love you too, Karen. God bless you. Well, this has been the Masters AMA, Masters Radio Pioneer Blog Show. We've been in your home on another Tuesday evening, and I want to thank again my producer, Mr. Hunty Bowen, and we'll be talking about his event coming up on August 3rd, and other things on the next show, and our next show will be Mr. Joe Gillum next Tuesday, and one of the pioneers of the AOK, which is one of the largest organizations in Texas, and we'll be talking about his career and his fighting ability. Stay tuned, and make sure that you look us up on the Android or iPhone application on the AMMA Masters app. And Thank you again for letting us come to your home, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Aloha.
Thank you for having us. Bye-bye.
Aloha, sir. Bye-bye.